Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Mr. Murdoch, do you accept that ultimately you are responsible for this whole fiasco?
No.
You're not responsible. Who is responsible?
The people that I trusted to run it, and then maybe the people they trusted.
Can you name
I worked with Mr. Hinton for 52 years, and I would trust him with my life.
The sitting is suspended for 10 minutes.
Told of kings in days of old, but there's no England now.
Nope, there's no England now. There's no England now. All that's left is Welsh rarebit, haggis, toad in the hole, bangers and mash. It's a remnant of England. Bangers and mash, toad in the hole, Welsh rarebit and haggis. I was up 5:30 in the morning today, which is, I mean, I don't get up 15 hours before I go on the air. But I couldn't sleep looking forward to these hearings, and I couldn't believe what I watched. The kangaroo court of the left wing in England, the Stalinist Inquisition, the vermin of the Labour Party, people who have never in their life created one job, just as in this country with the Democrats. The left wing never creates jobs, and yet they're attacking a man who employs 53,000 people around the world. This is not to condone the hacking scandal, but to try to bring down the entire news corporation instead of attacking radical Islamist preachers who are calling for the overthrow of Britain and the introduction of Sharia law. These left-wing Labourites hold a hearing on Rupert Murdoch and some hacking scandal that allegedly they were not even involved with. Is Rupert Murdoch the only one whose employees hacked? How about Piers Morgan for CNN, who boasted in one of his own books, in his own book, that he was involved in hacking? He taught how to hack. He wrote a sensational account of the UK tabloid industry when he worked there. And he gave a virtual blueprint for hacking into phones. And I'm talking about Piers Morgan of CNN. He wrote about it in his own book. And yet the FBI is now investigating Rupert Murdoch instead of CNN, instead of any other network such as NBC and its ties to through General Electric to the Obama administration. I think that's shameful when you see a president using the FBI as a private police force. We are this close to losing our democracy, believe me, if we haven't lost it already. But in watching the British Inquisition of Rupert Murdoch and his son today, many points came to my mind, some of which I've already described to you. But did you notice that a man was able to get into the hearings to attack Rupert Murdoch with a shaving cream pie? He was not stopped by the so-called Barbies, who looked like shrimp on a Barbie, rather than police. Could you imagine those absurd idiots with those hats, with no guns? This man walks in and almost... What if he had a knife or a gun or a club and could have hit this old man on the head? Would that have made you left-wingers happy? And what does that tell you about England? And what does it tell you about England that it was Rupert Murdoch's wife, Wendy, originally from China, who immediately leapt to her feet and punched this piece of garbage out? She went in with those nails. She hit him over and over again. And she smacked this moron in the face. I was so happy to see it. I didn't know who it was. All I saw was a woman defending Rupert Murdoch from an attacker, and the schmuck policeman, like 10 seconds later, the Bobby comes running in. Then some fat woman cop, like Keister Cops, comes running in. Some fat woman cop runs in after it's all over, right? And I said, wait a minute, that's his wife, man. And I look at this, and if this is not a metaphor of England today, a country that cannot defend itself against a pie thrower, let alone against radical Muslim terrorists, this is an amazing story that we saw today. But again, the big story is Rupert Murdoch, the only network chief or empire owner of the media whose workers may have hacked someone to get a story? No, we know that's not true. And yet here in America, the FBI has been used by Obama now as a private police force. It's frightening and chilling. You should know this. In order to attack the News Corporation. Again, let me tell you something. I have no warmth for the News Corporation. They have banned me from Fox News because of competitive reasons. Nevertheless, what's right is right and what's wrong is wrong. And the investigations should be unleashed upon NBC's close ties with the Obama administration, with George Soros's buying of so many American so-called journalists. Those are threats to our freedom of the press. Now, if you're not interested in any of this, if you don't know what I'm talking about, I can read for you from Abuse of Power, my new novel, which I did yesterday. I'm only going to do it yesterday and today, and then I'm going to back off until the book actually comes out in early September. I want to say something that's actually a milestone in publishing. It's never happened before, so far as I know. And I really don't need anybody out there to say anything, really. I'm going to tell you what reality is. Do you know that this book was number 143,000 yesterday when the show began? It was unknown. It was pre-publication listed on Amazon. And it was way up there, 143,000. In other words, no one even knew it existed. Do you know that with only a few short mentions on the Savage Nation and reading only a few segments of it, the book jumped to number 34 overnight? It is a publishing phenomenon. And who did it? You, the Savage Nation, the most loyal audience in America. Do you realize I did this without any help from any website? I did it without any help from Fox News or CNN or MSNBC or ABC or CBS or NBC. I did it strictly with you, the Savage Nation audience. And the reason I'm telling you this is twofold. One, because I want you to know what power you have to affect change. And number two, I want you to understand that you can change things in this country. We together have changed things, and we can change things. We are a powerful force. The Savage Nation is a very powerful force. But I want to mention again that this British Inquisition today ties back into Michael Savage having been banned in Britain several years ago. Why did they choose me? Why did the very same toads, you know, my headline on michaelsavage.com for the story this morning, I changed it several times. The first one was, I think, it was Dwarfs Attack Giants. That was my first headline. I want to see if it's still up there. I had Dwarfs Attack Giants, and then Wendy Saves the Day. But the fact of the matter is, you saw dwarfs. These were dwarfs. These were political dwarfs attacking a giant, the man who created an empire around the world who employs 53,000 people. And to me, it symbolizes everything that's going on in the Western world, where the dwarfs, the communists, the socialists, the leftists, who do not create anything, resent and despise those of us who do. And instead of attacking the radical Muslim preachers in England, as I said earlier, who preach every day to over the overthrow of the British government, the introduction of Sharia law, did you see a hearing on that in England? No, instead they banned Michael Savage several years ago. And why did they do that? Why did they ban me a few years ago instead of attacking the Muslim preachers who were doing such things? Because they always attack people who cannot defend themselves, such as myself. I have no way to defend myself in England. I've spent hundreds of thousands of dollars, hundreds of hours, and they will not take my name off that list of murderers and terrorists. How come they will not attack the Muslim terrorists in England with a hearing of this nature? Well, you can pretty much figure that one out. Again, if you'd rather talk about this, you can by giving me a quick call. There are other news stories, none quite as exciting as this. It's gone from 145,000 to number 34 in one day. It's gone down a little bit because I broadened the sites at which you can buy Abuse of Power, from Amazon to Barnes & Noble to Target, okay? But believe me, this says something that the publishing industry has recognized and that everybody in the American media will recognize, that the Savage Nation is a very, very powerful force. And we're going to use this force in the coming election. Not so much in bashing Obama, because he doesn't need any bashing. This man does a very good job of it on a daily basis with his communist policies. I wrote Trickle Up Poverty. I spelled out who I think the man is in abundantly clear language. And I don't need to do it over and over again. No, I'm going to focus on the fake conservatives running on the Republican side. I'm going to focus on the Michelle Bachmanns, who used you like a cheap trick when she was down and out. Do you remember she came on the show a year and a half ago? okay? She begged you to send her money, saying Nancy Pelosi was out to get her and throw her out of Congress. You sent her money. I had her on repeatedly when no one on Fox News even knew who she was. Do you remember that? Do you know that Michelle Bachmann refuses to respond to my producer? Now, I don't know whether it's she personally or the hacks that she surrounds herself with, but I will get to the bottom of it, and I will report back to the Savage Nation. And if we have any reason to believe that it's Michelle Bachmann herself who believes that it's no longer advisable to speak to the Savage Nation, I shall so report on this program. And that's who I'm going to focus on, Romney, Bachmann, and the other front runners. We're going to see who they really are and what they're really made out of. Because if you wind up voting in another fake Republican, you're better off with Obama. Irene in New York, welcome from WOR. Go ahead, please.
Mike, in May, Media Matters' George Soros declared war on Fox, just in May,
yep.
And they were going to start with Rupert Murdoch. This is what it right. is. It's all George Soros behind this.
Well, you don't think Obama is behind it? That's all a click job. I guess she's got to call another show. Craig in Bakersfield, California, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Mike. I've grown up all my life. In Australia, my family had a copy of the Sun newspaper, which Rupert Murdoch's father used to be the editor of, Sir Keith Murdoch. And I've seen all my life the growth of News Corp and how they've gone from like one little Adelaide newspaper into an international media empire. And this is the thing that people don't understand. News Corporation run on sensationalism. And because of the fact they run on sensationalism and photogenesis...
Wait, I'm sorry. News Corporation what on socialism?
You know, news needs to sell.
Hold on. Stop. I'm not hearing you. You said News Corporation what? Socialism?
I can't understand that.
Are you not hearing me, Beowulf? Is he not hearing me?
I'm not hearing you.
All right. What is it that you said? News Corporation blankety blank on socialism? What does that mean?
I didn't say that about socialism. Mr. Savage, what I said was, I've grown up reading News Corporation newspapers back when they were just a little tiny.
Yes, I understand, but then you said News Corporation something socialism.
No, I didn't say socialism, sir. I said they're growing up on sensationalism.
Oh, well, that's true for all newspapers.
Yes, and so America...
Yeah, newspapers are sensationalist.
Yes.
But look, wait a minute, hold on. All media is sensationalist. I'm sensationalist, am I not?
Yes, you are.
All right. So, in other words, why would you listen to this show unless you were going to get a sensation out of it? Isn't that correct?
I get sensation, but I also...
However, now let's pause for a moment. There are various sensations, aren't there? Varieties of sensations. Some sensations ring more true than others. I would think you'd have to agree with me on that.
Yes, of course.
All right. So, in other words, mere sensationalism is not in and of itself an indictment. I would hope you would agree with me.
I totally agree with that. It's not.
All right, so there's a way to ring someone's bell and still alert them to the truth. And there's another way to give them sensations that are utterly false. So in other words, when we see the left-wing American press sensationalizing the genius and brilliance of Obama, that would be a false sensationalism, I would say.
Well, that's hype.
Okay, that's called false sensationalism. So let's not fool ourselves here. The entire world runs on sensation. Everything you eat is based upon sensation or taste. Everything you ingest is based upon, when I say ingest, I mean beyond eating. Everything you do in this society is based upon impressions of sensationalism. And that's a product of advertising. So don't assume that it's only a news of the world. But having said all of that, let's take the staid New York Times, correct? You would say, well, they don't devolve into sensationalism. I would say that the type of sensationalism that the New York Times indulges in is one of false objectivity. That's another form of sensationalism. In other words, you would think, well, they're objective. They don't get into the girls with the legs like Fox News did with the lipstick, with the hair. You know what I mean? You're supposed to believe they're brilliant newscasters underneath it all. But actually, when it comes to Fox News, the legs and the hair and the lipstick are what you get. In other words, what you see is what you get. In the beginning, you thought that they were brilliant conservatives underneath the hair, the lipstick, and the legs. But as it turns out, they actually are what you see is what you get. I'll be right back.
Savage.
See the USA in your Chevrolet. America is asking you to call. Drive your Chevrolet through the USA. America's the greatest land of all.
Well, you see this song, this jingle I grew up on. Today, of course, it has no meaning. It would have to be a whole new jingle. Just as there's no England anymore, I could sing this song with a whole new set of words, such as See the USA in IKEA today. Korea is asking you to call. Symbol shot bang. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. I'm getting the feeling that this grilling, the Stalinist grilling of Rupert Murdoch and his son James today, was only of interest to those of us in the media. Now, so I have to ask you, is there anyone in the audience who saw those hearings today before I go down the wrong path here? I was fascinated. I watched for over an hour and a half, and then when the pie came, I couldn't believe it. I was watching to see the incompetent Brits and that stupid Bobby. You look like shrimp on a Bobby. Idiot running in after the fact. It was the wife, the Chinese wife, who jumped up and saved him. Man, those nails. I wish you ripped his face off. New York, WOR Max. Go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, right. Thank God for what you do. When you were mentioning the people who were running for a presidency, it came to mind this guy, Rick Perry. This guy's a Bilderberg. And he's also in favor of this trans-NASCO highway. I'm thinking to myself, who are we allowing to run for the presidency?
Okay, you mean what choices do we really have?
Yes.
You mean we have Bachman, who won't come on the show after she used my audience, or her handlers won't let her on the show until we find whether it's her or her handlers, we can't say for sure. We have Palin, who's not a factor because she can't win. We have Romney, who is Obama light. It's Barack Hussein Romney, frankly. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, you know what you're going to get with him. A check pants, mild, nice guy, wonderful man, terrific family, great story, but soft on illegal immigration, probably soft on terrorism. The only thing going for Romney is that he would probably be much tougher on Islamo-terrorists. What I can determine. I happen to like Kane. I like the black guy, the pizza guy.
I'm thinking about now.
I would think that if Kane, you've seen him around, they're giving him as short shrift as they can. I believe that if this guy Kane could get some traction, he could be president and he could save the world. I absolutely believe what I just said, and I don't need anything from him. I'm not looking for a free pie. Nothing.
Savage.
So I'm not the only one who watched the hearings today, but the wife, I mean, you look at the Bobbies, the shrimp on a Bobby at back out restaurant would be better than what they were used. Useless shrimp on a Bobby there. He comes running in after the fact, but who leapt to his aid? The wife, 6 foot tall beauty, born Wen Gi Deng in China. And she is the mogul's third wife and the mother of his two youngest children, Grace and Chloe. Of course, there was a bit of a scandalous start to the marriage. You know, Deng, age 42, married Murdoch, age 80, in 1999, 17 days after he divorced his second wife, Anna. But there was a little something before that. She went to work in someone's house as an exchange student, and before long, she and the old man were exchanging something other than, let us say, academic treatises. And then that marriage came to an end. So, I mean, look, she did very well for herself. But you know, you talk about stand by your man. This is a woman who you have to admire. This is a woman you have to admire. And she's 6 foot tall. I only wish she had connected with that piece of garbage, with the pie. My only wish is one of these days, one of these pie guys get it in the face, what they're trying to do to people. You know, here in San Francisco, they have a bunch of these scum. These low-life anarchist vermin who think that they're so cute, these leftist vermin with the pie game. And you know when they got it once good? They tried it on a former mayor, Willie Brown. Liberal mayor, liberal through and through, politically my opponent. Or let's say opposite to me. I always liked Willie Brown. I liked him personally when I met him. But I didn't like him, what he did politically. But this guy tried to hit him with a pie. Willie Brown came up a hard life from Texas. He took the pie and smashed the guy in the face with it. He didn't run away, you know, and then go to the bodyguards. It was very exciting today. I mean, it really was. And there she is. Early in the marriage, Deng also worked as the head of a strategic development for MySpace China. She's not been seen really till today. I mean, she's going to be a big hit after this. I would guess she has an unlit. Well, she's at the top of the food chain now. What's your reaction to seeing Rupert Murdoch hit with a pie during his testimony at Parliament? One, I feel bad for him. He was just defending himself. Two, I can't stop watching the replay. He deserved it. 3, it was unnecessary distraction from an important issue. 4, wait, what happened? I have no idea who you're talking about. That's the American. Wendy Deng, more than just a pretty face at Rupert Murdoch's side. 6 feet tall. Now, she didn't hit the guy, by the way. She threw a wild roundhouse punch aimed at the schmuck who tried to smush her husband with a shaving cream pie. But she was what I'm saying is she jumped to her feet. And compare that again to the Barbie on the shrimp on a Barbie there. Comes running after the fact. And you see the fat woman cop? Like here in America, they run in after the fact, and then they call in with disability after it's over. They have to get a hydration break and psychological counseling with the fire departments, too. When there's actual fire, they go out on hydration breaks. All the captains now of police departments, they put in women like this. The Chinese native met Murdoch when she was a junior executive at a Sky TV and is, by all accounts, a strong influence on his decision-making, though she is 38 years his junior. Well, why not? I mean, they can't love each other? Why can't they love each other just because there's a difference of 40 years between them? What does age have to do with it? I mean, the woman didn't shy. I have to say that Wendy is my hero. Wendy saved the day. I would say Wendy should run for office. I'd like to see Wendy debate Sarah Palin and what's her name? The one whose name I can't remember already.
Bachman.
I blacked myself. I know I did it on purpose. I get a blackout on Bachman. Once they start in with me, I black them out. Now, I'll come up with a name for her. She'll be finished. I gave a local guy a name once here, Mr. Softy, finished in radio. Way ahead of everybody. Try to syndicate. The minute I called him Mr. Softy, back on his feet. He was like shaving cream after that. I give a person one name and they're finished. Bachman doesn't come on the show. I'll come up with a name for her. There'll be one name attached to it. It's all over. You say, well, okay, you're getting vindictive. You're not. Well, so I'm getting vindictive. That's all. CEO and girlfriend who was found hanging out, history of domestic violence. That's some marriage over there with the San Diego. Then the kids found. She's found hanging from a chandelier naked and dead. And then the child's found dead at the bottom of the stairs? Okay. How about the idiot from San Diego who killed his parents, beat him to death with a hammer, and then locked them in the bodies in the bedroom, and then had a party on Twitter? He Twittered 60 friends to come over for a party. No, there's no drugs involved there. The kid was a Boy Scout. Now you know why Obama's president. You got guys like him voting, and they're on Obamacare till they're 26 because of Nancy Pelosi. I don't know. I think I'm on a roll here. I don't know if I should take a call yet and interrupt myself. Should I keep going with like one-liners, some good, some bad, or should I read from the book Abuse of Power? Should I? Okay, one paragraph. Okay, I'm not going to give the plot away. So Jack Hatfield, my fictionalized hero, gets into England. He's smuggled in a disguise with a group of people, right? But he doesn't look, of course, like who he is, except for a moment prior to takeoff when his fellow passengers started to pray together. There was nothing unusual about the trip. Jack had been warned of this and had joined in as instructed. As he prayed with them, he felt out of place like a conservative at Harvard. It's very funny. That's a good line, by the way. You have to see the context to understand how good that is. 3 hours later, as the train rolled into Westminster, Jack's mind flashed memories of his week here with Rachel. That's his former wife. They both thought they were in love at the time. Who knows? Maybe they were. And had wandered the streets of central London for hours, absorbing the sights and sounds, hitting all the usual tourist spots, Westminster Abbey, Buckingham Palace, and, of course, Trafalgar Square, with its beautiful fountains and majestic mid-19th century architecture. London had a unique vibrancy to it that was exhilarating, and it pained Jack to know that he was no longer welcome here. You think there's any autobiographical material in that paragraph? I don't know. Could be. I actually liked England when I had the few times I've been to England. I loved England. I liked the British people. I liked the architecture. The food, okay, it's a running joke. I mean, who goes to England for the food? It's like coming to San Francisco for the people. Symbol shot. 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com. I'm having a good time. I'm giddy. I'm up at 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning. You know, I had to consume. Here's what happens on a day like today with stress like today. The stress was so high from this, and I said, you know what, forget your diet. I swear to God, I'm up at 4:30 waiting for the hearings to come up. I watched dawn come up over the bay, and I stopped feeding the, I have to make an admission, I stopped feeding the seagulls that live near my house, old bagels. I'm getting afraid of them. It's like the birds, like with Hitchcock. They're like circling. I'm telling you, I don't feed them anymore because they attack that pelican. and I'm mad at the seagulls. I told her I'm not feeding them anymore. They're very intelligent. They're like dogs, these seagulls. And the beaks are razor sharp. I don't have to tell you. They can break open a clam. Can you imagine what they could do to your head? They're circling my house like a Hitchcock movie now. I wake up at dawn, and there they are, the two of them. And they swoop down on the deck like black figures out of a horror movie. I have to come out with a rake in my hand because I won't feed them a bagel. They're psycho seagulls. Anyway, I chase off the seagulls, and I watch the black go to the gray. You know, dawn is beautiful. Dawn can be beautiful from a mountaintop high in the Andes. That's what got me into ethnobotany. That one line, I'll get distracted now because, do you know that that's what drove me into ethnobotany back in 1966, 7, 68? One line from a scientific paper. Dawn can be beautiful from a mountaintop high in the Andes, written by Richard Evan Schultes, at the beginning of one of his ethnobotanical masterpieces. And I said to myself, wow, if there's a scientist who can write such poetry, I want to be in that science. That's what really drove me into all the years of searching for plants, was the poetry involved. But, of course, he was one in a million. You know, no one ever followed him. Many, some try, but they don't even understand that there's poetry and science. As my, well, that's a whole separate story. My mind is, so I get up at 4:30, as I said, up, can't sleep, mind churning. You know, you wake up in the morning and you have to let the dog out already because dogs are like, you know, they're chameleons. If I get up, I try to hold in going to the bathroom because I know once I set one foot out of the bed, I'm finished. He already has to go. The shadow already jumps off the bed and I'm finished. Because then once I have to get off the bed, I have to click on a light. Once I click on a light already, the iris opens up or closes down, whatever it closes down, right? It's open. Starts to, like, the shutter closes down. So who could sleep already with autonomic, starts to operate. So I lay back in bed. I say, all right, I'm not going to get up now at 4:30. Dog's back in bed. I'm back in bed. The hearings aren't for another 2.5 hours, 6:30 in the morning on the West Coast. So I blacken the curtains so I don't see sunrise. Every house I have, by the way, the first thing we do is we spend thousands of dollars on a double set of blackout curtains because I want to control my environment, right? I lay back again in bed. Can't sleep. It's impossible. Right here, the mind's clicking. You got to do this. The lawnmower is there. The car needs the washing. The guy's waxing the boat. Be sure to tell him the key, not to break the key. You know, the million things that are, you know, you're a slave. A Western man is a slave. And the more possessions you have, the more of a slave you are. Incidentally, that's true. But what's the option? To be the Dalai Lama with garlic breath? I mean, I really don't want to go there with the robes and start to hit up on old blonde ladies for money. You know what I'm saying? So I'd rather have the possessions than the problems. So, all right, I lay down 30 minutes. I can't take it. 30 seconds, I'm back out of bed. Now I'm up and I'm starving. 4:45, I am starving and I have to eat breakfast. So I said, wait, this is a heavy duty day. I'm stressed out. So I made eggs. I know it's like, oh, wow, you eat an egg? Yeah, eggs. They're hippie eggs, though. What I mean is like omega-3 eggs. The chicken was raised by people with PhDs in compassion. They're not in cages. They get to peck around. They have children for a while before they're slaughtered. You know, they're happy chickens, and the feed has omega-3 in them. The egg is a wonderful food, by the way. The lecithin in the food, don't be fooled. Don't, you know, you're probably on a no-egg diet. Most of you get up. You know, most men, I see them, they're starving to death. You know what they're eating? Like oatmeal. They're eating oatmeal and a raisin, and they think that they're going to live forever. They're still dropping dead like flies. Now, the fact is it's true that the rate of coronary heart disease has gone down since I started writing my books on how to eat. But how is it now that I'm going back to what I told you not to eat? That's the funny part. I have two eggs, but to counter it, the right side of my shoulder says, eat the eggs. It's good for you. You eat it. Don't care what it's like. It doesn't matter. You're starving. You have a big day ahead of you. Feed your brain. On the left shoulder, the angel says, but you can't have the sausage with it. You may not get that chicken apple sausage. You'll poison your arterial tree. Get out the broccoli. So I fried broccoli with it, with olive oil and some tomatoes, English style, because I knew it was going to be an English hearing. So I decided to fry some tomatoes in the frying pan, which I love. I knock a breakfast off. It's 4:45. I still have an hour and a half to go till it starts. Now the hearings are over, and I'm starving again at 11:30 in the morning. So I eat a terrible lunch, two Chinese lunches, beef and broccoli from a horrible chain restaurant. I won't even mention it. But I'm stuck in the suburbs when I'm not in the city, and the food is horrendous. Beef and broccoli, no matter what you tell them, no sugar, low oil. It comes in saturated dripping like with maple syrup on it. You can't. It's horrible. And here I am now on the radio, never feeling better. And I've just filibustered my own show. I'll be right back.
Savage.
you're not interested in my affairs. You're not interested in my diet, my cholesterol level, that I'm so stressed out that I'm eating risky. This is like risky behavior. You're talking about risky sexual behavior. What I've engaged in is risky dietary behavior. But then, nevertheless, I take extra vitamin E, vitamin C, and extra fish oils every time I indulge like that. Tonight I'll eat light, something on the light side, like spaghetti with no protein at all. I feel fantastic. What's wrong with me? Maybe getting up early and fighting off seagulls at dawn is a good thing. I often wonder about that. But the British Inquisition of Rupert Murdoch, you know, it was an amazing day in the life of the American media. When you see the Lilliputians, known as the politicians, trying to take down a giant of a man who created an empire that employs 53,000 people, when these bums in the government employ nobody, and all they do is give money out to deadbeats, it really is a story for you to absorb. Here they have a hearing immediately about Murdoch and a hacking scandal, without similar hearings on the threat of radical Islam in England. They have not had one hearing on radical Islam and its impact upon the English government, its impact upon the civil justice system, the Muslim impact upon the impotent police. Instead, they have a hearing on Rupert Murdoch, which is not to justify the hacking. Don't put me in that position. Why don't you have an inquisition here by the FBI on CNN and Piers Morgan? Why don't you have the FBI go and look into George Soros's buying up so-called journalists in America and what threat that is to our freedom of the press? Okay? So it was a kangaroo court. And there are many metaphors you can draw from it. Stalinist Inquisition, kangaroo court, etc. and so forth. 1-800-449-8255. This is Michael Savage. You want me to read from my book, Abuse of Power? And I'll do a little bit in the next hour. Just yesterday and today, and then I'm going to drop it until probably late August, early September, God willing, unless the cholesterol gets to me first, in which case you'll have to buy the audio version, because I... You know, I am so fatalistic lately. It's frightening. I'm even getting freaked up by my own fatalism. I'm thinking a lot about it. I don't like it. So I'm plagued now with fear of that. I've always had a thing since I'm six about death, but now it's bad. So I think, you know, it's very bad. Maybe I need a vacation. I can't go anywhere, though. It's worse when I go somewhere, because then you really have nothing to do. Do you have any? What do you do on vacation? How do people vacate? What do they do? Vacation. Vacate. That means to vacate what? Your mind? Can you turn your mind off on vacation? How do you turn your mind off on a vacation? Why would I want to be anywhere when I have weather here that's the best in the world right now? What, am I going to go to Iowa on vacation? I have a friend with a 161-foot yacht sitting in Nice, and he's invited me aboard. I don't want to go to Europe. First of all, I have to fly through London. That's number one. Number two, I don't know what to do on a boat. I have no idea what to do on a yacht. I love yachts, and I love boats for like a day. Okay, you go aboard, you look in the engine room, you check out the instrumentation, you have a lunch, you have a beer, and then what? I want to go home. I want to be back in my bed next to the bay fighting off seagulls. I don't want to be anywhere else, because I've done too much traveling in my life. As a youngster, I was all over the South Seas, and I really got fed up with traveling. What's the pleasure in it? I hope I'm not bumming you out. I mean, many of you are on vacation right now, listening illegally down the road. You've left your wife and children somewhere, and you said you had to go to a dental appointment, but I know you pulled over on the side of the road to hear your favorite talk show. This used to happen to me every summer. Mike, how did you know I'm listening to you in a neighbor's driveway? Because my wife hates you. Oh, there's no England anymore. There's no England anymore. There's no America anymore. See the USA and IKEA today. Korea is asking you to call. What else would you like to talk about? Do you think that this was the most important hearing of your life? Do you think that the British have lost their sanity completely by... Of course they should grill Murdoch, but do you think these hearings were more important than the hearings on radical Islam in England, when everyone who's been there knows it's Londonistan, when you've got people there with 10, 15 children who don't work, who come over and abuse the country, and people who go over there and talk about overthrowing England and installing Sharia law? This is not the subject of a hearing, but this is? Don't you understand that it's upside down? Murdoch came out good, by the way. His stock went up. I'm sorry I didn't buy it yesterday. My instinct said that the bottom was yesterday. I never listened to myself. The only thing I did right was buy gold. I'm not plugging Swiss America, but I am. I mean, I almost bought a lot of gold. It was at 600. Now it's at, what, 1,600? I didn't buy it at 600. People talked me out of it, so I bought it at 1,200. Now it's at $1,600 or something an ounce. What's to stop gold from going? My instincts knew that Murdoch would bounce back. He didn't build a business, an empire like this, with 53,000 people to let Lilliputians take him down, okay? Did you see those Lilliputians? Did any of them look good to you? I mean, did they look good to you? They look like low-life librarians from northern Westchester after a heat wave with a crumpled suit. They look like my fifth-grade teacher after she wrote on the IRT before air conditioning. They looked like Janet Reno after a ride in the back of a pickup truck with someone she didn't know. They looked like, I mean, I can give you an example. They looked rumpled, you know, and I don't mean rumple of the Bailey. They looked rumpled, and they really looked rumpled. You know what I'm saying? There's nothing left in England but bangers and chips. There's nothing left in England but shrimp on the Barbie. The Barbie. See the Barbie running at the end? After the fact, like with a whistle out of Keystone Cops. But Wendy Murdoch, she's my hero. I only wish that the nails caught that bum in the face. That's all I thought she connected. I found that it was around. But look how she defended that old man, right? He didn't even know what went on. He thought they were delivering him shrimp on the Barbie with a tea cart. He didn't even know what went on, what the ruckus was.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Sorry, if I can just say something, and this is not is an excuse, maybe it's an explanation of my laxity. The News of the World is less than 1% of our company. I employ 53,000 people around the world who are proud and great and ethical and distinguished people, professionals in their life, and perhaps I'm spread watching and appointing people whom I trust to run those divisions.
All the stories have been told of kings in days of old, but there's no England now.
Look, the fact of the matter is they all do it. CNN hacks, everyone knows that. We know that ABC is full of hacks. We know NBC is nothing but hacks. We know that the relationship between General Electric and Obama is extremely unhealthy for the sanity of the American people. And for the British Inquisition today of the Murdochs to have focused solely on the hacking scandal is ludicrous. When you have Sharia law being talked about in the streets, you've got violent Muslims screaming they're going to overthrow England. You've got Muslims living there on welfare with 10, 15 children that don't work. Everybody knows what's going on in England, but the government looks the other way and attacks Murdoch. And what you see are the Lilliputians on the left attacking a man who has 53,000 employees because they are jealous, just as they are in this country. It's a microcosm of the United States of America where the losers, the Lilliputians in office, despise those better amongst them who have created something for the American people over here. The police were useless. It was his wife who was useful. But let's talk about the heat, if you want. It's unbelievable to me, people, what's going on in this country with the heat. I know that you're going to say it's global warming. Where's Al Gore? You'd think he'd be jumping all over this. I mean, it is the heart of summer, and it's a hot summer. Remember we had a very cold, wet winter? Do you remember? So now we have a hot summer, but it's probably not the hottest summer on record, and if it is, so what? So another record was broken. And then what are you going to do when we get a cold winter? You're going to say, again, it's global warming, whatever it is. How are you dealing with the heat? I really don't want you to call. You know, I luckily moved to San Francisco a long time ago for the fog, and we've got fog. In fact, it's a little warm today, 72-ish in San Francisco, but it's going to be cooler throughout the weekend, like 65 here, because the fog's rolling back in off the coast. Amazing. Oh, 75 now at San Francisco. Probably the best weather in the world. 75 is going to go down a little bit on Friday to 67 and Saturday 65. I love it. Mid-50s at night to sleep. Fog, you need three covers. Air is cool. I mean, that's why I live here. The people forget about it. Inhuman. Inhuman people like zombies, all pie throwers. Filled with stupid people who throw pie. I mean, by and large, pie-throwing lunatics live out here. And that's why you have the governor that we have, and that's why you have the system of corruption that we have here. They're so interested in their isms that they don't even understand what's going on around them. What would you like to talk about in the Savage Nation? Let me take the calls. I've been very negligent in not servicing my callers. I want to thank you again for taking my new book, which is not even published, Abuse of Power. I mentioned it once, twice, three times yesterday in the Savage Nation. I read a few passages. I put it up on michaelsavage.com. And it went from 145,000 on Amazon to number 34 in one day. I mean, it raced past books that are out there in the stores. Why? Because the Savage Nation is probably the most powerful audience in the media. Now, I mean that. There are much bigger audiences, but I don't know that they're quite as loyal as this audience. It's a very interesting phenomenon. The loyalty of the Savage Nation is something that's unique, and I don't know how to thank you other than thank you. So there it is. Michael Savage makes his fiction debut. A terror cell whose goal is nothing less than total political control. Hardened former war correspondent Jack Hatfield rose to national prominence for his provocative commentary. But after a vicious left-wing smear campaign, Jack finds himself toiling away in obscurity. Sound familiar? When a routine San Francisco Police Department ride-along turns deadly, Hatfield is set on the trail of a vicious terrorist group. And before it's over, he'll uncover a plot that echoes through the highest corridors of American power. In the spirit of Vince Flynn, Brad Thor, comes this lightning-fast, high-intensity thriller debut. Powerful marketing campaign. I don't need a marketing campaign. I'm glad they're doing it, but the most important marketing campaign is that the book's good. Should I read you one more piece of it? Oh, yeah, please. It's in San Francisco. One section. Nah, forget about it. I'll take your calls instead. I was going to read you a piece of the book. I think I'd rather take your calls. How come nothing from a big city? I got callers only from the smaller towns. What are they doing? They're not listening to me today because I'm talking about the healing, the hearing? I'm not going to entertain. I mean, I entertained you for an hour, so now you got to entertain me with callers. Sacramento, Dan, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hey, good afternoon, Michael. Can't agree more with you on everything. I think it's just a complete distraction. I was watching this. I watched a little bit on the web, saw the pie. And,
so you think the hearings are a distraction? By whom? By the Labour government of England, who wants to get back in power by destroying a man who created 53,000 jobs? Of course it is. It's the same as Obama. He wants to hold on to power, even though he's created almost zero jobs. Of course he wants to hold on to power by giving out freebies.
Absolutely. I think they're boy Obama.
All right, well, we covered that. All right, let's move on. Let me read you a paragraph from Abuse of Power about Jack's former wife. Jack didn't exactly think of Rachel as dead weight, but he had no interest in seeing her. Jack met her while doing a segment for one of his shows, The World of the Runway Model. She was tall, almost 5'9", with raven hair and green eyes. After interviewing her for the program, he took her for a quick coffee at a local cafe in North Beach. She immediately struck him as more than just a body. "What did you learn from your parents?" she asked him. Out of nowhere, it seemed, but that was the way she was, inquisitive, in ways he never quite fathomed. And she was direct. There was nothing she would not ask. They quickly became inseparable, joined in body and in mind. But they were also talkers, big time, who hashed everything out. Or to death, whichever came first. In the end, they realized that neither of them was really listening to the other. Two alphas competing for the same turf. At least he and Rachel had always had a wonderful time in bed, which is more than could be said for a lot of married couples. But they clashed just about everywhere else. After the divorce, he vowed never again to mistake an orgasm for a declaration of love. I hear she's dating a tax attorney, Copeland said. That's got to be a hell of a letdown after the turbulent world of Jack Hatfield. What is this, Bob? This is your life? You've been underground for a while, my friend. I'm simply trying to get a feel for your state of mind. Anyway, that's from my book, Abuse of Power. I really am. I think it's so good. I cannot wait to see the movie. I cannot wait to see the movie. I can't wait. Maybe I'll play like a bit part. I mean, in order to sell the book, I have to play a bit part. I can play the villain. Maybe I could put on a head. No, I can't. Who should I play in my own book? My dog is in the book. His name is my dog's real name is Teddy. He's Eddie in the book. He plays a prominent role. But if they book him for the film, like imagine I'll be his agent. He's going to get a big buck. Tel Aviv, Israel, set in Tel Aviv. I'm already writing the next novel while writing a nonfiction book, while doing a daily radio show and getting up at 4:30 in the morning to have eggs. Can you believe it? And fighting off and fending off seagulls with a look at the callers I got. Come on, guys. Doug, do me a favor. Go through the callers. Pie thrower hits Murdoch. Look at the stories. They're horrible. I don't want to look at the news. It's terrible out there. It's really terrible. I got to tell you. I mean, the news is frightening. The kid in San Diego hits his parents on the head with a hammer, kills them, drags them in the bedroom, locks the corpses in, and then twitters to his friends to come over for a party. And 65 fools come over for a party. When have you ever heard of things like this? It's the drugs. It's a combination of antidepressants, Ritalin in childhood, antidepressants in it starts with Ritalin and those like drugs when they come up with the fake ADHD so the drug companies can poison the child's mind and turn and addict your child to that. Then put them on Ritalin. Then they go into antidepressants, and then after that they put them on medical marijuana, and then after that they wind up hitting their parents on the head with a hammer. And then they vote for Obama. Or if they're on a more cowardly scale, they throw a pie at Murdoch. Wife defends splattered mogul in hacking hearing where he evades blame for scandal, says the local rag. That's a scandal unto itself. Paisley Dodds, Associated Press. You talk about a scandal. What a scandal that is, that there's a thing called Associated Press that does virtually no news except anti-American news. Anyway, what's the big deal here? Tell me what the scale really is. Why is this such a big deal right now? What's the big deal about this? I want to know why this is the biggest scandal of our time. Tell me why it's the biggest hearing. Okay, be a brilliant leftist. Show me why this hearing should have been held. Show me why it's bigger than the Muslims taking over England. Show me why it's a bigger scandal than the gun running into Mexico by the ATF and the Justice Department. Tell me why this is a bigger scandal than the Medicare fraud costing us billions of dollars a year. Tell me why this should occupy America's mind and the mind of the Western world. Okay? I'm open to hearing. You know, educate me. This is more important than the subjects I just mentioned? It is not. It absolutely is not. Austin, Texas. Cody, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Oh, Dr. Savage, it's an honor, so thank you. I've been listening to you since I was a freshman in high school. Wow. Basically, I want to say that I thought Rupert Murdoch, though he wasn't a Howard Rourke type figure, he came off stronger and stronger as the hearing went on. You know, I thought he was.
Yes, you know what I liked his line, and he said I would trust him with his life. Did you hear loyalty like this? He said about a man who he fired, who worked for 52 years, he said, and I would trust him with my life. When have you last heard a corporate executive say a thing like that?
You haven't. And that's, you know what, I think that's, I was watching the stock price, by the way, at the same time I was watching the conference, because I invested yesterday, so I literally was invested. And look, through the whole thing, through both sessions, before and after the pieing, the stock price just kept rising and rising. So I know I wasn't alone in thinking, hey, you know.
Oh, so you put money in News Corp yesterday saw it bottomed?
Yeah. Yeah, I put in. I watched that thing for days since July 4th. I saw it go down.
Well, You're good. I wonder how many liberals made money on the News Corp scandal.
Yeah, none. And I wanted to say,
how many liberals shorted the stock? I mean, did Soros short News Corp stock with his hedge fund? You think they shorted the stock?
Oh, of course they.
And then took it on the other side.
Global socialism.
No, don't even get me started with socialism, globalism. You know, I'd rather talk about corned beef. Kansas City, Ricky, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. I had a terrible night and even worse morning, so I decided to entertain myself and watch the parliamentary hearings this morning. And I don't know if you watched the beginning of them, but they were escorted in by three bobbies and a FBI-type guy, and they stood behind at the hearing. I saw these two women sitting behind the Murdochs. I had no idea who they were. And
You mean when you saw the Asian woman that was his? You didn't know it was his wife in the beginning, right?
I did not know it was his wife. And then the next thing, I'm watching the hearings, and this guy barges in, and the Bobbies don't do anything.
They were ordering tea. You see, they were busy ordering tea and seeing what their pension was worth that day.
And I saw this woman jump up and defend Rupert Murdoch, and then the Bobbies moved in and grabbed this guy. And the first thought that came to my mind is that is why England is going down the tubes. And when I heard
that's exactly right. Useless, worthless police work. Well, what's he standing in the big lug? That's why there's no England anymore. Stood there like a Schmendrick. Stood there, watched Wendy give a leap. She leapt like a tigress. Did you see that leap?
Oh, yeah, it was
incredible. I mean, this woman sprung like a cat. She didn't just, like, slap. This woman sprung. She sprung like a cat on real legs with the hand.
Yeah.
And the Bobby was there on the side, you know, as I say, checking his BlackBerry to see what his pension was worth. Did you see the fat little woman cop run after the Bobby, no less?
Yes.
Yeah, another one with a hat from Sir Arthur Conan Doyle days.
But what came to my mind is that is why England's going down the tube, and that's why the Chinese are going to gobble us up like sardines.
Well, they gobbled already. They gobbled pretty good. I had shrimp and lobster sauce for lunch now that you mention it. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Well, surprise, surprise. Obama sees new hope in major debt deal. No kidding. The Republicans sold us out. And Obama will get everything he wanted. They'll cut a little bit and get it back some other way, and they'll raise taxes. An immediate $500 billion spending cut, which means nothing, with a total of $3.7 trillion in deficit reduction in the next decade. You believe that? They're telling you what they're going to cut over the next 10 years. You hear this? And it includes entitlement reforms. Just the word entitlement unto itself is ludicrous. What are new entitlement reforms be? How bad would it be to raise the retirement age by 2 years? And how bad would it be to force people to use any doctor on a government dole, or government paid, rather, to pay a $25 fee every time you see a doctor? A cut down on a lot of abuse. People who are just using doctors for recreational medicine, my term from 1981. I make good sense, but okay, I'm only a talk show host. I'm not a politician. Consequently, the country's screwed up because the smartest people in the world are not in politics. They're not the smartest. They may be the most devious. They may be the most dangerous, but they're not the smartest. Smartest people in the world are running businesses, writing books, saving lives in a hospital. Maybe they're social workers. Maybe they're a chef. They're certainly not politicians. That's how I see it. Florida, David, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hey, Michael, as I was listening to you read about the character of Jack, it really reminded me of really what's been happening with me. I mean, when I listen to characters like that, I have to identify with them for them to be really good. And as he goes through all he goes through and then comes across the plot and then little by little is revealed to him, whether it's through his own work or things happening when they need to happen, that's so much what it's been like for me in the last year. And so
Wait, you're telling me the few pieces of abusive power that I've read, you've already identified with the protagonist, Jack Hatfield?
Well, sure, because, I mean, a year ago, I was a conservative, and fiscally and politically, morally, all across the board, but I wasn't paying attention. And then, as you know, this is...
Are you just pulling my leg, David? You sound like a crank caller because you're not making... I know you're about to do a shabba-dabba-doo job. Can I throw a pie in your face, David?
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. That's a Liberty Bell sound. I'm trying to wake you out of your stupor. When you realize, you talk about abuse of power, look at the abuse of power of our president. It doesn't get any worse than this, what this man is doing. But anyway, you've heard that before, so there's no point in going on with that. The fact of the matter is the Murdoch hearings today were absolutely unnecessary. There are far bigger problems plaguing the West than hacking, which is not to justify phone hacking by any member of the media. However, we know that CNN has a host named Piers Morgan who boasted about hacking in a book he wrote. And frankly, if the FBI is investigating the Murdochs or the News Corporation here in America, in order to show fairness, the FBI should be investigating Piers Morgan because he even boasted about phone hacking. Okay, so well, let's see if that plays out or if they're being used simply as an attack organization by the Obama administration. What would you like to talk about? I'm going to do anything except lifestyle. No lifestyle today. Remember last summer in San Francisco, a German tourist was killed while walking in the street, a woman. Here's a 50-year-old woman or so. Yeah, she's 50 years old. Her name is Mechtilde Schur. She's here with her husband. She's an elementary school teacher. She's celebrating her 50th birthday and their 25th wedding anniversary in San Francisco. And they're looking for a place to eat near Union Square. She's looking in a deli window, and a group of gangbangers start shooting at each other, and a bullet flies and kills her out of nowhere. It's taken a year to bring these vermin to a court. Can you believe this? Six plead not guilty in slaying of German tourists. German tourist. Six alleged gang members pleaded not guilty to charges connected to the shooting death of a German tourist last summer in the San Francisco's Union Square. The six men sat silently, they really mean sullenly, at their public as their public defenders entered their pleas for them in San Francisco Superior Court. Police say some of the six belonged to a Western Addition gang and that others were in a gang named for the Valencia Gardens Housing Project. The men were brawling outside an end-of-summer dance, blah, 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 blah. Philip Stewart, Marcus Bluford, and Willie Easton, all 19, Delvon Scott, and Raheem Jackson have been charged with murder and other crimes. Jackson has been charged as an adult. A six-man Gethsemane Pita, age 18, has been charged with being an accessory to murder. So this is an amazing story being swept under the rug because it's bad for tourism. When will this cycle of violence end? When? Well, you know when it'll end. Never. It'll never end. As long as you have a welfare state, as long as you have a Democrat Socialist Party under Obama, Pelosi, Reid, that encourages welfare families to have as many babies as possible and puts them on free medical care and will subsidize any amount of medical care, you're going to never have an end to this. This nightmare will never end until we have a law and order candidate come to power. When have you last heard the word law and order? Law or order? Never. Have you heard law or order in any of the candidates so far? It's like Gone with the Wind. 1-800-449. Dr. Phil's Beverly Hills Estate. $6.25 million self-help guru turned talk show host Dr. Phil McGraw and his wife Robin are selling their villa estate in Beverly Hills. What am I supposed to get jealous about that? So some skank will buy it. Built in 1960, the Mediterranean-inspired home is situated almost half an acre and offers 6,900 square feet of living space. I bet it has a chef's kitchen. I bet you they serve Chardonnay wine. I bet you they eat fish. What do you mean they have a chef's kitchen? What's a chef's kitchen? Key rooms in the home include, don't you love these write-ups, these sappy write-ups? Key rooms in the home include a chef's kitchen with breakfast bar. Ooh, a breakfast bar. We don't have that, Mildred. Theater-style family room, office, library. Ooh, it has a temperature-controlled wine storage area. You can buy them for $69 at Costco. And a formal living room where you can have such luminaries over, as you can imagine, such as Sean Penn. How come Sean Penn's not visiting his hero, Chavez, in Cuba, where he's getting chemotherapy? The exterior feature of the home include a swimming pool and spa. How exciting. Archie Bunker has that. Covered porch, cabana, grill. Wow. Hey, it even has a private detached garage. Woo. That's really living it up. That's really living it up. It has closets. Look at that. That's like buying a car with a radio and heater. You know, includes radio and heater. Separate here, his and our closets. And an intricate stone design motif in the bath. That's really worth getting up for in the morning. I mean, when you're stoned on a medical marijuana and you, the next morning you wake up and, you know, life has no meaning for you, just remember that you have a stone design motif in the bath. I love these chef kitchens that they advertise in these houses. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it if you're a chef. But I remember my mother, God rest her soul, we lived in an attached house in Queens, New York. You know, one of those, like a London, like an England house, like a brick house that's 20 feet wide and lots of 100 feet deep. She had a stove, a four-burner electric stove in the kitchen. What she could cook on that four-burner electric stove, she always had four gourmet meals going at any one. When I say gourmet, I don't mean fancy. I don't mean drizzled with strawberry juice. I mean real meals, and they would be in the refrigerator waiting for you. Come home from, like, college, and I'd say, Ma, what's to eat? She says, well, we have this. We have that. Like, four different restaurant-sized meals, all on four electric burners. She didn't need a chef's kitchen. We didn't have a breakfast bar. Unbelievable. I have a picture of her in my old book. I found a copy of, where is it? The Enemy Within. I found pictures of it that I put in there. That's actually, in a way, what am I writing for anymore? I should have stopped with The Enemy Within. I showed family pictures, the brother, the mother, the father, the dog. I showed me as a young man with the weightlifting. How many books do I have to write until it's over? When does God say you can take your hands off the wheel? Do I have to die to stop writing books and doing radio? I got to ask myself a question. If I were a normal person, I would have retired 15 years ago. Why am I doing this? A, because the country's in trouble, and B, I think I can have an impact. C, because there's a degree of ego involved, and I want to prove that I can do it. I've been thinking about that. How much is ego driven of all of us? How much? What drive is this from a work ethic I have? I ask myself every day. To keep going and going and going when really I'm asking you. I mean, why am I doing this? Should I keep doing this? Now the lights will go on. Of course you want me to do it. You wanted Jesus on the cross also with the spikes in the hands and the feet. Of course you want me to keep crucifying myself on the air every day. I need a vacation. Maybe I should go to that boat in Nice and relax, kick my feet up, and just drink for 7 or 10 days. 1-800-449-8255, Michael Savage. Dr. Phil's Beverly Hills Estate. What kind of doctor is that guy? What does he do on the television? I never watched the... Does anyone know what he does? Dr. Phil. How could you believe in a guy called Dr. Phil? If you go to a real doctor, let's say you like your heart, you have pains in your chest. I don't like knowing a doctor's first name. I want to call him doctor. That was another thing I never liked. Like when I was in graduate school, when you like thought you were familiar as a graduate student with the professor, where you could call him by the first name like Leonard. But I was always uncomfortable. I was the kind of guy who always used to call him Dr., you know, Dr. Blatstein, because it was like more formal. I didn't want to call him Leonard. I didn't want to know. I mean, Leonard was killing the mice anyway. You know, it was like Lenny and the mice in the Grapes of Wrath. But Dr. Leonard Platskin, I'd rather call him Dr. Platskin instead of Leonard. He died of brain cancer. Remember I told you about the guy who said you have to kill the rats or you're going to lose your fellowship, and he knew I had no money? I said, well, I guess I lost my fellowship. I'm not killing the rats. He said, get out of here. He threw me out of the laboratory. I had nothing. And that's how I went into another field of botany, because I didn't have to kill animals. It's not that I loved rats. I didn't want to kill them. He said, it's two different things. You don't have to love rats to not want to pith their brains and see them die in your hand. You know who enjoyed doing it? And I'm sorry to say this. This doctor, he died soon thereafter of brain cancer from all his experiments and his the weird chemicals he was using. He was a pharmacologist. I know his name. I can't mention his name because the widow will probably give me a sue. I didn't like him. He was a mean son of a gun throwing me out like that. So, kill the rats or you're going to lose your fellowship. I said, okay, I lost my fellowship. I had nothing, zero. And I wound up in ethnobotany because of that. So, you know who we found who did the job, who loved... And she was a dwarf. She was a very nice dwarf, by the way, and I got along with her very well till they fired me. I didn't keep in touch with her. But it was something so crazy in that laboratory. She would hold a little lab rat in her hand and stroke it and talk to it. You know, like, hello, Dory. How are you today, Dory? And she'd soothe it, and then from the behind, she'd come up with like a Nazi in the back of the neck and pith it. You had to experiment to see what was like the organs, what they looked like after they gave them Jell-O, you know. They put one set of rats on Jell-O, another set of rats on, like, rat feed, and another set of rats on, like, a diet that I grew up on. And whichever one died first, they would definitely sell that diet to the American people. Okay, Michelle in New York on WOR. What's on your mind, Michelle? Go ahead, please.
Savage, it's an honor to speak to you. I enjoy listening to you every evening.
Even when I get distracted today and talk about little stories like that, you like it? You like the storytelling?
I want to tell you, I was impressed with the story of your mother's cooking, because my mother, being a German lady, unfortunately now deceased, cooked the most wonderful meals in a very tiny, tiny kitchen in Munich, Germany, and I just say it's the chef that makes the kitchen and not the kitchen that makes the chef.
I have the copy of the from a book I wrote years ago called The Enemy Within. In the middle of it, on the left side, with Mom in her kitchen, Queens, New York, 1980s, and she's holding a, you could see the stove. Boy, did I look good. Look what happens to a man in a few years. And there's a big thing of soup she made and everything else, all on a little four-burner stove. There's my father, long dead, with my dog, Tippy, who bit me down to the bone. Tippy the dog bit down my...
Oh, my goodness. I come originally from Manhattan, and that's what our dog's name was, Tippy.
Maybe it was a popular name in those days, like Muhammad is in London today. You know, like Muhammad's the most popular name for young boys in London. Maybe Tippy was a popular dog's name then.
That's coincidental, huh?
You want to hear something funny? Like, I started talking about Tippy the dog when I went on radio, starting in the beginning, right? So I was a local host in 1994, became national in the year 2000, and I would tell family stories. I saw a replay of The Sopranos recently, and there was a flashback to when Tony Soprano was a kid. He had a dog named Tippy. They probably got it from my show, right?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. I wonder how many of my ideas have wound up in TV shows and stuff like that.
I'm sure, man.
Here I am with my son who kicked off the Paul Revere Society and is now, see, I was showing the Compassionate Conservative, look at this, one of many Compassionate Conservative conventions long before the Republicans used it. I was Glenn Beck long before Glenn Beck was in recovery, before he even, you know, kicked the bottle. I mean, I was doing big events. Before the Tea Party has ever had tea, I was doing big events, which is good. It's all a sequence. I don't need the credit for it. I know what I've done. And here I am years later. So what was your favorite dish in as a young German girl?
Well, my mother used to make for my birthday strawberry shortcake homemade every year.
See, I don't eat sweets, and I don't eat sweets. I mean, I have a good friend who's a pastry chef, and he cooks them for other people, but he doesn't eat much of them himself. So I'm talking about regular food, not pastry. What was your favorite mother's meal?
Delicious roast pork made with beer, onions, and carrots.
How about Spretzel? What's that stuff? I go to a German restaurant from time to time in San Francisco.
It's like a homemade pasta.
What's it? No, Spretzel. What's it called? Spretzel or Spreckel?
Spetzel, it's called.
Schmeckel?
Spetzel with an S. It's like Sam. Spetzel.
It sounds like my uncle used to call him a Schmeckel.
But she could whip up fabulous dishes of all ethnicities. Really.
No, seriously, what is that grain? What is Schmeckel? I mean, speckle. What is it?
It's made from flour and water and some salt.
Oh, you mean you roll up like little, and you fry it?
No, it's boiled in water.
Oh, it's boiled, because I know it doesn't, you know, like stick in your gut. It's very good.
It is. It's delicious.
My mother made a dumpling. You know, it's funny, I love certain Chinese foods. Like, everyone loves pot stickers, right? Everybody does. But it runs throughout all cultures, the equivalent of the pot sticker. The Eastern European version of the pot sticker was two pieces of dough that she rolled by hand with a rolling pin, right? And she would stuff it with potato and onion and then put the dough over it, and she'd boil it in water. It was the most delicious thing in my life.
Okay.
I have the recipe somewhere. I never made it. I'd like to try making it myself.
Germans also make something similar with a potato dumpling. It's called a Kartoffelknödel.
A Kartoffelknödel? It looks like what, Bill Clinton's ears?
I want to tell you something else in reference to the kitchen. I'm trying to sell my home for over a year, and the people don't want to buy it because I don't have the granite countertops.
Oh, yeah, and you need the lighting and the granite countertop, sure, so they can not cook in it.
Kitchen, so they don't want it. They don't cook.
Isn't that, well, no, you have to renovate the kitchen. They don't even want to bar. That's a big job, by the way. So I want to go back to one German dish that I like. I like, do you like goulash?
Yes.
Now, that's not German. Goulash, that's not a
Hungarian.
German dish, is it? It's Hungarian.
Yes.
Yeah, Hungarians, it's like a weird thing. Hungary, Huns. Isn't it true about the Huns invaded that part of Europe and they're descendants of the Huns?
I believe so, but I can't.
Yeah. Well, all right. They knew a little bit about food and meat from all of the years of the Marco Polo. And all right. Thanks for the call. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Looks like the Republicans sold us down the river $1 trillion in tax increases. That's what the estimate is today. They've given Obama everything he wants. Dead hope. Communist Obama praises Gang of Six plant. So they say they're going to cut cut here and cut there, but there's $1 trillion in higher taxes over, I guess that's over 10 years. It should be over 1 year. I think there should be $1 trillion more in taxes the first year taken from those who produce everything for society in order to make people on the bottom feel better, because you don't want them to feel bad. Tax overhaul must be estimated to provide $1 trillion in additional revenue. It envisions tax changes that will reduce existing breaks for a number of popular items while reducing the top income tax bracket from the current 35 to 29 or less. What? They're going to lower my taxes? I don't believe it. How are they going to raise $1 trillion by lowering the taxes on people like myself? Look, I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not one of these fake guys on the radio who make believe that they're one of you. The guy flies in a private jet and he hobnobs with George Bush and every day is you. I don't understand it. You know, he should take pleasure in the fact that a man with no education could rise so high in this, only in this society. I mean, really, you know, why not take pleasure in the fact that no one ever went broke underestimating the intelligence of the American people? I don't understand it. The three Republicans, all conservatives on the Gang of Six, include Senators Mike Crapo of Idaho. That's a heck of a name to go through life with. He must have been some tough dude. Hey, Crapo, you want to... Hey, Crapo, let's see you throw that ball. I mean, he would have had to learn how to defend himself really young. Hey, Crapo, let's see you jump through that hoop, Crapo. Tom Coburn of Oklahoma, the doctor, and Saxby Chambliss of Georgia, who has a particularly close relationship with Boehner, dating to their days together in the House. I don't want to know any more about that. It's a family show. So the taxes are going up, and they're going to cut here and there, but they're not going to really cut. They're going to transfer. They're going to transfer because they're not touching Social Security and they're not cutting Medicare. If they were to simply go after the Medicare fraud, which is in the hundreds of millions of dollars, I got an article on my website about a ring they caught of Cubans in Miami that would make your hair stand up. They were pulling the HIV racket. They had the HIV clinics running in Miami around the clock with fake patients. And when they were finally caught, they ran to Cuba and they can't get them back. Oh, my God. The Medicare fraud, billions and billions of dollars a year. Instead, they're investigating the News Corporation, the FBI, you hear? The nation's $14 trillion debt limit is raised. What do you mean raised? It's like giving a child who's drunk and spending like crazy a credit card again when he's shown he can't balance a book. Stocks soared for the day, propelled by the deficit plan's emergence and Obama's decision to seize on it, as well as by strong earnings reports. The Dow Jones Industrial Average 202-point biggest one-day leap this year. Better than... All right, it's good. It's very good. But when you got a guy like Crapo going along with it, it's not good. $1 trillion in new taxes? Wait a minute. Hold it. If guys in the top bracket are going to be have lower taxes like me, where's the $1 trillion going to come from? You. You're going to pay more. That's all I can tell you. You're going to pay more. The guy in the middle is going to pay more. So in other words, exactly what I said in trickle-up poverty is turning out to be true. Obama's attacking the middle class. Now he's doing it with his friends from the Republican Party. Even so, in the hours after the Gang Six brief on the law, at least one member of the Republican state Senate leadership, Lamar Alexander of Tennessee, signed on as a supporter. So too did Senator Kay Bailey Hutchinson. She's about as conservative as my dog is. Well, all right, that's what you get. Did you expect anything else? Included a revenue component. That means taxing you to death, along with savings in Medicare and Social Security. That's lip service. They're not going to. Sander Levin's not going to let them cut from Medicare. He's busy with the slum housing that him and his brothers own in Michigan. So he can't afford to cut any welfare money, because otherwise his slum housing will diminish. The income will diminish on Sander Levin's housing. How's that for an investigation? Sander Levin's slum housing, him and his brother.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Today's big story is, well, the British Inquisition. And I got to tell you something. Thank you for going to michaelsavage.com and for moving my book from number 145,000 to number 34 overnight. It just shows you the power of the Savage Nation, okay? It just shows you that we really don't need the midstream media. We don't need the other websites, do we? We need each other. Well, who does Rupert Murdoch need? After today, only Wendy. In watching the British Inquisition of Rupert Murdoch and his son, some key points came to my mind. To begin with, notice how the British lowlifes are grilling Rupert Murdoch instead of radical Islamist preachers who are calling for the overthrow of Britain and the introduction of Sharia law. Rupert Murdoch and phone hacking are the biggest problem in England right now. This is a man who employs 53,000 people worldwide. And that's who they're trying to destroy instead of the radical Muslim preachers living on welfare with 15 children each. And I have to mention again that this ties back into Michael Savage being banned in the United Kingdom. Why did they attack me 2 years ago? Would you believe it? Because they chose a target that they knew couldn't fight back. They always attack somebody who's weaker than them. They never defend themselves against those who are stronger. The radical Islamists in England have become so strong, and the leaders of England are so cowardly that they dare not oppose them. Another point is this. Did you notice a man was able to get into the hearings to attack Murdoch with a pie without any supervision of the so-called bobbies, the British police? That's nonsense. What's not nonsense is identity theft. Someone stealing your credit cards and try to destroy your life? Don't be a victim. Call my advertiser, LifeLock, today. Call LifeLock now at 1-800-LOCK-485. You get 60 risk-free days just for Savage listeners. 1-800-562-5485. Write it down. Call now, 1-800-LOCK-485. What does that tell you about England? What does it tell you about England that it was Rupert Murdoch's wife, Wendy, who jumped up and saved her old man from being smacked with a pie? She leapt out of her chair and smacked the moron in the face. Over and over again, she hit him. A member of parliament even commented afterwards that she had a good left hook. It was only afterwards that the British bobby ran in along with some fat little British policewoman. This is the England of today. They can't even defend themselves against a pie thrower, let alone against radical Muslim terrorists. Shame on you, England. Stop attacking Murdoch and start attacking the preachers of hate in England. Wendy saves the day. Let's go to michaelsavage.com, top left, Abuse of Power. Savage to make his fiction debut. A thriller shooter score a bullseye with its target audience, says Publishers Weekly. You want to see Wendy saves the day? Lawmaker makes Rupert Murdoch a sympathetic figure? What up? Congrats, FBI. Thank you for busting leftist hackers. Good for the FBI. In my opinion, they did the right thing. More than 10 FBI agents executed a series of search warrants at the New York homes of three suspected members of the infamous hacking group Anonymous. A dozen FBI agents arrived at the Baldwin, Long Island home of Jordan Giordani, armed with a warrant to search his computers. Other warrants were issued for homes in Brooklyn and Merrick, Long Island. Nationally, 14 people were arrested. And what did these SOBs do? Well, you can't believe what they did. They hacked the Arizona Police Department. They posted personal information on law officers and hacked and defaced websites in response to the state's immigration law. In recent months, police in Italy, Spain, and Turkey have busted suspected members of Anonymous. This is incredible. And I would say throw the book at them. And what else is on michaelsavage.com? Everything, everything, everything. Let's rush to the bottom of the page. I don't want to take up your time. Behemoth vacation home rises in the Ozarks. Some thinks it's a military bunker. It's not a military bunker. A hacked DOT road sign reads, Impeach Obama in Greensboro, North Carolina. You got to see this story. Tiger Woods' mistress is going to sue Gloria Allred. You won't believe what Gloria Allred did to her former client. Your hair will stand up. But then again, no, it wouldn't. Take a look at Gloria Allred, and you'll believe actually the hooker over the lawyer. As I've always said, the oldest profession is more honorable than the legal profession. 1-800-449-8255. This and more right here on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Boom, ba-do, ba-do.
life could be a dream. If I could take you up in paradise up above. If you would tell me I'm the only one that you love. Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Hello, hello again. Shaboom, and hoping we'll meet again. Oh, life could be.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. Now, we have a very interesting soundbite of the poor president, where he is challenged by a reporter from CBS, and he gets very defensive, almost adolescent in his reaction. Listen to three.
What was the number one complaint, concern, or piece of advice that you got from foreign leaders about the U.S. economy and your stewardship of the economy?
What about compliments? You didn't put that in the list. There was only complaints, concerns, or...
Wow. No, seriously. You know, look, did you hear that? This is frightening. He's very, very defensive about this question. This is a president. This is not a teacher. When a student challenges him, listen again. Listen. Hold it. Let's start again. You say, okay, big deal. Stop blowing it up. He's just a human being. He's had a rough week. Look at all the time. Look at what he had to do in India. All those meals, all those banquets. Now look at the trouble he had in Indonesia, visiting his school, visiting the madrasas he went to. It was tough work. So now he's in South Korea. It's the last leg of the trip, probably. They'll probably stop in Honolulu for a little, you know, home week or whatever. And he gets a question that's real from Chip Reed. Listen to it again.
What was the number one complaint, concern, or piece of advice that you got from foreign leaders about the U.S. economy and your stewardship of the economy?
What about compliments? You didn't put that in the list. There was only complaints, concerns, or...
Sounds like a husband with a wife. That's something like a husband would say. What about no compliments? It's like, nah. It's like, you didn't put that in the list. It's almost like a chick would say that, truthfully. The other way around is what it is. Where a husband asks something of the wife, and someone says, well, what did someone say about your housekeeping? What were some of the concerns that the relatives had about your housekeeping and how you took care of your house? And then the chick says, what am I, no compliments? You didn't have that one on your list of how clean I am, how good I am in the kitchen, but only complaints and concerns? It's pretty unbelievable. Listen to three again.
What was the number one complaint, concern, or piece of advice that you got from foreign leaders about the U.S. economy and your stewardship of the economy?
What about compliments? You didn't put that in the list. There was only complaints, concerns, or...
All right, you know, it's almost sad now. See, funny, I don't like to see him on the ropes like this. I want a strong president, even a leftist. I want him to be, you know, macho. I don't like that metro thing. Just think of me as a kid who knew nothing, because all kids know nothing. But Americans are so naive, they think that there's wisdom in a child, and they get on their hands and knees and ask a child what they think. What does a child know? They watch television. They want Jell-O. You want it to eat Jell-O? Or vote for Democrats about the same thing. So Dad took me by the hand. He knew it was a dangerous country. And he said, look, Michael, here's the way it is. And he said, one band of crooks gets the power called the Democrats. And then all the years they're in power, the crooks call the Republicans, point their fingers at them and say they're no good. They did this. Don't you understand that there is no fundamental difference? There are some structural differences in some ways. But at the end of the day, not a heck of a lot of difference. The best was the 07. Where he, 06, where he calls a Chinese a Korean. Listen to 6.
This gentleman right here, he's got his hand up. He's the only one who took me up on it. Go ahead. And I'll probably need a translation, though, if you're asking the question in Korean. In fact, I definitely will need a translation.
Unfortunately, I hate to disappoint you, President Obama. I'm actually Chinese.
Oh, my God. I actually want to have Chinese food now. I told you, I'm very suggestible. When he was in Indonesia, I wanted the rice table. I couldn't find one. When he's in India, I went to an Indian restaurant. I ate the buffet. I like Chinese people. I've always gotten along with them. I only wish they weren't communists. That's the one thing. Why can't they just all go capitalist and get rid of that Mao Tse-Tung business once and for all? I admire them. They've always been an industrious nation. Going back, they had six-masted sailing ships. You have no idea how advanced they were. They got set back by communism. First, they were set back by the warlords, which killed all of the development of China. But the worst thing that ever happened to the Chinese people was Mao Zedong's revolution, which he got from Karl Marx. His brain was is ruined. Karl Marx ruined most of the world with his insanity. He's caused more death and destruction than any single, shall I say, philosopher in the history of the world. The worst. Like a scythe taken to the middle class across the globe. Go tell that to your tenured professor brainwashing your daughter, who's going to come home for Thanksgiving with purple hair and rings on various body orifices. Go ahead, go tell her why that happened to her. She's going to sit at the Thanksgiving table sneering at you, probably on either marijuana or crack cocaine. God only knows what she'll be doing in the bathroom. All because of your college education that you killed yourself for. You know, I feel bad for kids. You look at them in the mall. I feel bad for the children. I look at the parents. The women look like Stepford wives. They're like blank. They all got great bodies. You know, everyone exercises. They starve themselves. They're anorexic. They look like post-op transvestites. It's true. But okay, some of us like that look. It's not such a bad look. You know, today, and everything's different. I mean, you look back 100 years how women look. They look like women. You know, normal hips, normal, what? Like a normal woman. Now, if they look like a normal woman, ugh, I don't want to look like a woman. I want to look like a guy who's just gone come back with, like, surgery. But anyway, let's put that aside. It's just personal taste with people. But you look in their eyes, they're like blank. It's like staring into a blankness. I preferred, like, regular women with carriages rocking them outside, like, Longfellow Avenue, wearing, like, babushkas and big dresses. It was another world. I mean, the children weren't kidnapped at the rate they are today. They didn't wind up in shallow graves. The mothers were with them every second. They knew the world was filled with horrendous monsters out there. They would kill a man who looked at the child in my day. The mothers would kill him with a rolling pin. They would have attacked them with umbrellas, with anything they had. They looked him one look at one child, they'd beat the hell out of him. When I would, all the women would have attacked the man in the street. Let's say a strange guy came to the neighborhood and they were like rocking their children. Toddlers were running around. The boys are playing. If anyone, a strange guy came by and looked the wrong way, the women would have beat the guy up. Now it's like they invite him in to look at the gas line. Sure, come on in. Why not? I'm tolerant. I've been brainwashed in school into accepting everything. Except people who love America. That's the one thing we can't tolerate, is the American flag and the love for America. Everything else is fine. Fine. Mexican flag, perfect. That's all. I'm just rambling on with my views of the world. I know you love it because you think the way I do. I'm giving voice to your innermost thoughts. That's all I can do on the radio. That's my single most important role. Forget reading the news and giving you my views. Very important. The most important thing, though, is the emotional bond I create with you by exhibiting what's inside me and daring to speak it out. And then you say, holy God, it's exactly what I think. I'm like, your guy's amazing. It's like he's reading my mind. I know, believe me, I know, 16 years in the making. It didn't happen overnight. I'm no overnight success, my friends. No, trust me on that one. There's no overnight deal here. This long time in the making. It took millions of years for me to get here. Think of the evolutionary process. Ancestors through privation, they were still reading books. 1,000 years ago, they were reading like the Bible, studying and reading books. I mean, they didn't just get born yesterday. What do you think? This is an accident that you like the show? You could even do this if you play golf. I mean, truthfully. It's not about education. It's about inspiration. It's not about education. It's about inspiration. So what would you like to do on the show today? I'm going to get a hero, meatball hero. I was ruining my diet and my arteries. I was like anxious. I reverted to childhood foodie. It was so good. It was so good, man. That meatball hero, when you haven't had one in 29 years, the way that bread cracks and you, oh God, with sauce dripping down on your neck. You have to lean over. You know, I couldn't even wait to get it home in the car. I walked around, I leaned over, like you bite into it, you burn your palate, like one of those. You know how that good it is? You let yourself go for a minute. Because that was the day Obama was giving away another part of our national security. And I read that the Long Dong missile could wipe out the West Coast. I figured, heck with it, have a meatball hero. You know what I mean? So I'm eating the meatball hero, trying to avoid burning my palate. Avoid gravy on my shirt, leaning over, you know, and I'm walking around and I walk past the Chinese restaurant, which has outdoor tables. And lo and behold, there's three little cute, little sweet, little 12, 14, 14 year old, like high school or junior high girls, like innocent little lambs. And they're eating outside. So I'm like a curious guy. I look at everything. Nothing passes my eye. I look at everything. That's how I was originally a biologist. I looked at plants and things that you can't believe about plants and animals. So I look at everything. I want to see what the girls are eating. Look what they're eating. They're sharing a box of white rice, and they're pouring some hot sauce over it, and they're eating it like it's a feast. And I said to myself, these poor children, they're malnourished. That's why their brains don't function. The Asians had beriberi from eating white rice all those years. If they were eating just plain brown rice, all right, but they're not. They're eating milled rice. They're eating a beriberi diet, and their dumb mothers don't even tell them what nutrition is. The mothers don't even know. The girls think that they're doing something green by eating just rice. They're not eating any animal product. They're living light on the earth. And the poor children, they're deficient in every major nutrient. And I'm going to say something to them, they arrest me. So I have to button my lip. That's why I wrote Healing Children Naturally, because, and I'm not selling a book. I can't believe it, how the lack of knowledge has permeated every corner of society. So don't assume that because they live in an affluent white suburb that they know what they're doing. Most of them are dumb bunnies. You understand? And their children are the same, and it's frightening, and it's heartbreaking. Believe me. That's why I said to you, it's good to have knowledge. But if you eat of the apple of knowledge, what is it? What good is it if the people around you are ignoramuses?
Savage.
What is evil? Well, we can start with the radical Muslim terrorists who are taking over England and trying to kill us. But it goes much further than that. The American Conservative magazine this month features a piece by Jack Hunter that he calls Defining Evil. Jack Hunter joins us now. Jack, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Good to be with you as always, Michael.
Well, you're fooling around with the heavy metal music, teenage rebellion sort of comedic stereotype. But what kind of real evil are we actually talking about? Define it for us, not bumper music.
Well, first of all, Michael, my favorite thing about the Michael Savage program and the Savage Nation is what you have to say. My second favorite part is the great bumper music you play, the Motley Crue, the Metallica, of course. And that's sort of in line with what I'm talking about in my most recent column at the American Conservative called Defining Evil. Now, I, like a lot of American teenagers growing up, I'm 37 years old now, loved heavy metal music. I believe you said your son was a fan of heavy metal music. That's why you use it on your show. The reason I was writing about heavy metal is something called the American Conservative, which is the magazine I write for. I recently attended a conference in Las Vegas called Freedom Fest. It's a big gathering of libertarian and conservative thinkers, and I was on a panel for the American Conservative, and we were talking about if we could get back to a more traditionally conservative foreign policy in line with what Ronald Reagan had, instead of the George W. Bush concept of fighting evil all over the world, that was sort of too abstract and really not conservative. You know, the only people who can save us from evil are Jesus Christ, for instance, that we're really overstepping our bounds. That's a little unrealistic. Well, a gentleman stood up and said, if you can't fight evil, what do you stand for? And that got me to thinking a little bit. What is evil? What is it in our foreign policy? Well, I came to the conclusion that this gentleman's definition of evil, and unfortunately, a lot of conservative Republicans during the Bush era's definition of evil, was closer to my juvenile concept of evil as it relates to heavy metal.
Well, how would you define real evil today in America and abroad?
Well, here's the problem. Is there evil in the world? Yes. There's evil in our hearts. Each man has the capacity for evil. When we're talking about foreign policy, was Saddam Hussein evil? Absolutely, he was evil. Is Muammar Gaddafi an evil dictator? Yes, he is. But does that mean that we should have American troops in Libya? I don't know any American conservatives who think that. I know a few neoconservatives and Obama loyalists who think that. Is the regime in China evil? Well, yes, I would dare say they are, but does that mean we're going to stop borrowing money from them? The point is that, yes, there's evil throughout the world, but the idea that we're just going to fight it everywhere and it's that black and white is a little juvenile, just like my concept of evil as a heavy metal fan. In my column at the American Conservative, I talk about going to see, or when I was a at 15 years old, I was a big fan of Metallica, who had a song called Am I Evil? Why did I like the song? Because at 15 years old, I was attracted to anything that sounded evil. I also mentioned going to a concert by the band Slayer. Now, anybody who's familiar with the band Slayer, they're called a death metal act. They've been around for about, 30 years. I went to see them last fall here in Atlanta, which is a little closer to me here in South Carolina. What I saw at that concert were fathers and sons, people who liked the stuff back in the 80s, and their young sons do now. There was a scene where a man was wheelchair-bound, and the audience held him up to enjoy Slayer. It was fathers and sons singing the lyrics. The reason I bring that up, it was a fairly wholesome situation, but the music, the brutality, the devil references and all this sort of silliness sort of brought me back to my point about evil. Their concept of what evil is really comedic nonsense. It's symbolism. It's silliness. It's the kind of things we were attracted to as teenagers, whether you were a fan of the band Kiss or AC/DC or Motley Crue or Metallica, the band you play. It's silly, and as adults, we recognize that. We look back on it with nostalgia. It's goofy, and it's fun. Well, we can't look at our foreign policy that way. You know, there is evil in the world, but this idea that evil is this, total black and white issue, and we just go to war, we send our best and bravest to any country, anywhere to fight evil, is sort of silly on the face of it. The gentleman who stood up at that conference that I attended and said, if you don't fight evil, what do you stand for, is not completely wrong in what he said, but his foreign policy extension, if you follow that philosophy, should we be in Libya? Should we invade China? No, I don't think most Americans think we should do that, and we need to think in more grown-up terms about our foreign policy, instead of something that is more akin to what somebody might think of evil being as it relates to American heavy metal. And that's my main point. We need to grow up.
So, of course, fighting evil is not only a foreign policy issue. Where else do you see it?
No, I mean, we have evil in this country. A lot of people would think abortion is evil, and they're not wrong. A lot of people would think that many of the, hell, I'll go to this extent. I think what Obama and the Democrats are doing in this country with the spending and taking money away from our children and grandchildren is evil in the sense that how dare we do that to future generations who never asked for it and certainly aren't going to be capable of paying back such a mountain of debt. That is evil. And that's sort of my point. When we talk about particulars, which relates to policy, we can discuss what's good and what's bad. We can have a cost-benefit analysis. Should we go to war with this country? Should we not? But to stand up and say, as George W. Bush did and Barack Obama is continuing in the same tradition, we have to fight evil. That's what America's about. Well, that's why we're in Libya right now. And that is an absurd situation. John McCain, who supports us being in Libya, says it's our values. No, our values are what's best for the United States of America. And to the extent that we grow up, we recognize genuine national interests and our genuine defense, we're going to be better off. To the extent that we are juvenile in our thinking and fighting evil and end up in places like Libya, and heaven forbid, other places we don't belong, we're going to spend money we don't have, and we're going to sacrifice lives that we really didn't need to in the first place.
Well, should America's mission really be to fight evil? Are we a religious nation?
America's mission should be to look out for the interests and defense of the United States of America. That's all we can do. We should lead by example, not necessarily by force. Sometimes force is necessary, but not in the name of fighting evil all over the world. There will always be evil in this world. Only Jesus Christ, in my opinion, can save us from our inherent sin, not the United States. We are a great country, but we are not God, and we need to grow up in our thinking. Fighting evil is not a practical foreign policy position. It's fun at a heavy metal concert, but, looking out for this country and its interests first is what we need to be doing. That's the grown-up way of looking at foreign policy.
Well, you say anyone would want to fight evil in the abstract, but the concrete details tend to complicate such arguments. What happens when abstract evil becomes concrete? And give examples.
Well, what happens is the abstractions are only good to the degree that they remain abstractions. Look at somebody who was obviously evil like Saddam Hussein. Why was he our ally in the 1980s? That's precisely when he was gassing the Kurds. Now, we could have made a good case that we needed to fight evil then, but we didn't. He was our ally. Now, whether that was right or wrong is something we could look at in retrospect, but that sort of leads us to my point, that yesterday's ally is tomorrow's bad guy, and so on and so on. How many people are we allies right now who are really downright evil people, China being one? Saudi Arabia, if you look at Parade Magazine's list of the world's worst dictators that they put out annually, Saudi Arabia, that regime who we're friends with, who Barack Obama shakes hands with, who George W. Bush shakes hands with, his family are friends with, are regularly listed as worse dictators than Saddam Hussein or even the current Iranian regime. That's my point. It's not that they're any less evil. It's just that that's not how you address practical foreign policy. That's all I'm saying. And grown-ups know that.
So in your opinion, what paradigm shift do we need to adequately address evil?
We need to go back closer to what Ronald Reagan had. Ronald Reagan called the Soviet Union the evil empire. He recognized it for what it was. What did he also do? He shook Mikhail Gorbachev's hand. And at the time, quite frankly, a lot of the neoconservatives, I remember Norman Podoritz was one of them, said that Ronald Reagan was an appeaser, that he was like Neville Chamberlain in 1939, and this was Munich all over again, the same thing you always hear. And yet Ronald Reagan was absolutely right. He did what he had to do diplomatically, and we won the Cold War. Now, a lot of the neoconservatives at the time would have preferred we went to war with the Soviet Union, turned a Cold War into a hot war. That would have definitely been fighting evil. Reagan recognized them as evil, and then he proceeded accordingly as an adult. That's what we need more of in Washington, D.C. You certainly didn't see it with George W. Bush and any Republicans who are still stuck in that mindset, and you sure as hell are not saying it with Barack Obama, who's continuing at the same policies.
Jack Hunter, thanks for bringing this to the table.
Always good to be with you, Michael. If you want to learn about this and more, I encourage you to visit southernavenger.com. Y'all take care.
I'll be right back. It's the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Sensitive to the fact that only this president has received the kind of attacks and disagreements and inability to work, only this one, put him in a position that he should not receive the same kind of respectful treatment of when it is necessary to raise the debt limit in order to pay our bills, something required by both statute and the 14th Amendment.
Did you hear that? And it's organizations like the AARP who control these leftist politicians. AMAC is fighting back. The Association of Mature American Citizens. Your membership can help stop the left wing. Call 800-255-4199, 800-255-4199, or go to americaisrising.com, 800-255-4199, americaisrising.com. In all the roads go back to politics. They all come and go from politics. There's nothing more political than health and nutrition. Look what Obama did to the greatest medical system in the world. So let me read you something that I remember hearing when I was a child. He who plays his fife and eats his way will live to fife another day. Now, what does that catchy rhyme mean? He who plays his fife and eats his way will live to fife another day. Well, it means that if you eat your way, you're getting certain nutrients which are life-giving and longevity-inducing. What is whey? It's the liquid remaining after the milk has been curdled and strained and turned into cheese. There's a liquid that remains, and it's usually discarded, I believe. Now, what's in the stuff that we throw out, called whey? Well, it's rich in so many things, riboflavin, B12, magnesium, potassium, zinc, selenium. So he who plays his fife and eats his whey will live to fife another day. It's the equivalent to eating whole grains as opposed to eating white bread. It's equivalent to eating brown rice as opposed to eating white rice. You know, beriberi was rampant in Asia when they ate white rice until they found out that all of the nutrients that were being thrown out in the husk of the rice were the nutrients required to prevent, for example, rickets. You know, that's an old thing you learned in high school probably. I don't even know if they teach that anymore. Right now they give you a pill instead. Everything they tell you to eat garbage, live like a lab rat and take a pill. And then if you get sick, go to the quack and get six more pills. That's all. But those of us who actually studied foods and what's in them and want to know how to protect ourselves from disease have written books about it. So I remember, for example, there's another thing that's coming back to mind from my great book, 20, 30 Years Ahead of Its Time, called The Skeptical Nutritionist. And this was about another topic, if only I could remember it. I'm a little hungover, frankly, from last night. I went to a big dinner. Took the dog, and I drank a lot of vodka. I feel great, don't get me wrong. Don't say it's hypocritical. I believe in vodka. But vodka's a health food if you don't do it every night, which I don't. So there was a subject in here that I wanted to find. Oh, I remember. It's, it's fava bean hemolysis. I know that's not on everyone's lips. It's a disease we know nothing about. But I remember when I uncovered it, when I was writing this book, how many doctors wrote me who were ahead of their time, They said, oh, my God, Savage, how did you do this? Where'd you find it? Well, I had just gotten my PhD from the University of California, and I was very just fascinated by ethnic diets, and I studied every arcane piece of literature there was, and I came up with some interesting things. And so I found this about fava beans. I've never eaten a fava bean ever since. Now, sometimes if I go in an Italian deli, you see fava beans, and they're fine if you're not, let us say, I shouldn't say allergic to them, but that's close to what I'm about to tell you. There are individuals who do not understand that they lack certain enzymes to break down the fava beans. It's called a G6PD deficiency. I know it's too technical for you, and I don't want to do it to you, but the fact is you get very sick eating fava beans. It's equivalent to acute hemolytic anemia. And you say you don't know what that is. I'm showing you what can happen when you eat certain foods that you're not aware, you're not even able to digest. For example, it's well known that Jews, most blacks, and most Asians cannot digest dairy products directly because they are deficient in the enzyme necessary to break down milk, the milk product known as lactose or milk sugar. Jews, black people, and Asians have very low amounts of lactase, so they are to avoid dairy. Did you know that? So the medical profession, instead of telling Jews, black people, and Asians, don't eat dairy, they tell them, take a pill with some lactate in it. The trick would be to avoid the dairy. Now, why would Jews, blacks, and Asians have evolved or adapted to a low dairy diets? Because there weren't high dairy diets in their traditional environs. There were just not high dairy diets. Basically, there weren't high dairy diets, so they adapted to not eating dairy, and they didn't develop the enzymes necessary to break down milk sugar. Now, let's go to you. Many of you believe in raw foods because you're ignoramuses, and you think that you're an ant or a rat or some kind of animal in the plains. That's absurd. The fact is that you should eat cooked foods. You're a human being. I'm coming up with something very, very small here. The issue of how ethnic foods are very important, both to know what to eat and what not to eat. It's called fava bean hemolysis. And there are people who cannot eat fava beans because they lack the correct enzyme to break down fava beans. And what happens? The urine becomes very dark or red. Shock may develop in bad cases, and death can follow. Did you know that? This condition is caused by a lack of glucose 6-phosphate dehydrogenase. That's an enzyme that breaks down the fava bean. G6PD. You don't have G6PD if you are a Kurd, for example. There are people called the Kurds, as you all know. In the north of Iraq, there's a whole land called Kurdistan. And the Kurds have one of the highest frequencies of this disorder on record. And favism, which I just described, affects individuals with a Mediterranean phenotype. And hemolysis can occur within only a few hours of inhaling even the pollen of fava bean plants, or within 1 or 2 days of eating fresh or dried fava beans. So if you are a Kurd, don't eat fava beans. You say, well, what does it have to do with me? I'm not a Kurd. I don't know. Maybe you are the type of individual who is a Mediterranean background, and you also are deficient in G6PD, and you may have a hemolytic reaction and not even know it. You go to the hospital, you have dark urine, red urine, you have shock, and you don't know it's because you just ate a fava bean salad in an Italian deli. I'm trying to warn you that this kind of knowledge was known back in ancient times, going back to antiquity. As far back as Pythagoras in the 6th century B.C., 6th century before Christ, people were warned that eating this type of bean could yield death. And in the 5th century B.C., Herodotus also mentioned favism. Now, you've forgotten it, though, because we don't know anything about food in this country, of this nature, I mean. All we know is what looks good on a plate. We have geniuses who go to cooking school with pimples on their face, and they come out as long as they know how to drizzle olive oil on something, and put strawberries and raspberries on steak, they think that they're a genius. But in this century, acute hemolytic anemia was reported in 1926 in a Panamanian plantation population. Well, I don't want to go into it because it's too complicated. Maybe you've learned something. But here is another example of the classic one man's meat is another man's poison. And we can all learn from this and remember not to put down our friends who may find some of our most magical food combinations totally repugnant, because the abhorrence of our favorite food can often reflect a survival instinct which we must learn to respect. Did you like that? This is all from page 29 of The Skeptical Nutritionist, not in print, so I'm not selling you anything, unlike Wallbanger or those who sell floor mats at every turn. I'm giving you information for free because it's important to do. Now, what if you're not of a Kurdish background? I'm going to just read a little bit more to you. You don't want to hear any more about that. Did you know that I can tell you what they studied, Arabs with this and Jews and this and that. I don't think Christians are affected by this at all. I think they can eat anything. I get the feeling the cracker can eat most anything. And that's why they live on mayonnaise, white bread, and scotch. Good genetic stock. They don't worry about G6PD deficiency because they never eat the stuff. They wouldn't be caught dead near a fava bean. Give them a white bread sandwich with mayonnaise and a nice scotch, and that's it. They're happy as a Maasai eating the blood of an ox. I think that's funny. And so I'm making myself laugh. I sound like a nutty professor now. Remember you had professors who would tell a joke that was so arcane only he laughed at it? And you thought he was a genius because he was laughing at something you didn't understand? I just did that because I did just say something only I understood.